Now, a warm welcome to everyone to the Q4 final 2018 quarterly report of Resurs Holding. Sofie Tergue is my name. I'm responsible for investor relations. I have Kenneth Nilsson, Chief Executive Officer, CEO, with me, Peter Rosén, Chief Financial Officer, CFO, as well as our CIO, Sebastian Gren, who's going to tell us more about IT activities, where we stand currently, and the direction we're headed in. Then we'll proceed with a Q&A session. Jens Hallén from Carnegie will be our moderator for the Q&A session. Kenneth, you have the floor.
Thank you, Sofie. Thank you, and welcome, everyone. It's nice to see so many of you here today in spite of all the snow here in Stockholm. That's one of the benefits of having your head office in Helsingborg. We see the advent of spring now. We've concluded another year, another quarter, and another year, a good quarter, and we can see that we have a total of four quarters grown with strong lending up 16%, 4 billion more in lending than when we closed a year ago. We delivered the best results ever, 1,143 million, 6% up in increased net income, not in line with our growth in lending, but there are a number of explanations: the situation in the capital markets, a mixed impact. Peter will tell us more about that in a few moments. But regardless, we see an improved earnings per share, 5.72 kronor, also up by 6%, and this means that we will be proposing to the AGM to pay out a dividend of 3.60 kronor per share, up 9%. And that means that since we paid out 1.65 in the autumn in dividend, there's another 1.95 to be paid out following next AGM. Our segments: Payment Solutions closed the year up by 12% compared to last year, 10.5 billion up in lending. As usual, the increase consists in an increase in existing partners and also bringing new partners on board. Our e-commerce continues to grow, and we have over 35% of our total Payment Solutions operations within e-commerce. Our different digital solutions have raised a lot of interest. The digital application, which we launched just over a year ago, has gained a lot of interest in Sweden. We see that it's facilitating, simplifying everyday life for our partners in retail and the consumers and ourselves. Over 80% of all new applications are submitted digitally currently. We have services such as our mobile application, making it easier for consumers to apply for a credit. Not everyone would like to talk to someone in store and discuss their credit ratings. We have a solution. We have Click and Collect, which we told you about in our previous quarterly report. It's gaining more interest. And not least, we have our merchant portal, our interface to our retailers. It has created a great deal of interest because it provides more flexibility in store for the retailers. You can follow the omni perspective. What do people do in store? What do they do online? You can follow the development of shops and products, the best-selling products, etc. You can do it also on an iPad, and the sales process is no longer tied down to an actual sales point in store. Supreme Card has also taken off with an additional lift, shifting more and more to selling on incoming phone calls rather than DM and similar ventures. This has made a big difference. 50% of all new 2018 Supreme Cards were sold to customers who dialed into us. It's also a lot better way in the sense that we have lower costs. These are known customers. We see that there's a high level of activation provided on these. We also see the impact of the AI that Erik, our CEO, told us about in the Q3 report, where we are able to predict which customer groups will tend to become inactive or close their Supreme Card, and the churn, the number of customers lost, is going down as a result. That's very important. Consumer Loans is also doing very well. We've seen excellent growth, 19% growth. The lending is at 17.5 billion. mainly a strong offering to the market is behind this, but also the credit engine, which has turned out to be very efficient. It's a possibility for us to increase our sales to a maintained or reduced credit risk level. During Q4, over 80% of all new loans paid out went to customers who are already existing customers and are in our database. 95% of all applications were automatically processed, and over 60% of all loans granted were signed with e-signatures. We really benefit from our credit engine, and in Q1 2019, we're launching it, rolling it out in Denmark. Solid. Our smallest segment, insurances. I'm sure you recall about a year ago or so when we talked about our travel insurance in the UK. We had some turbulence there. It's very pleasing to be able to say that that's all over and done with. We have a healthy, tidy insurance operation, which perhaps doesn't show the highest increase ever in premiums earned, but we see an increase, and we also see the raised cost awareness in the operations, where we've made a great deal of savings, and we have a company which is now a lot more efficient. In Q4, Solid invested in a new or updated technical platform for Norway, so our ambition is to go even further ahead to strengthen up and improve in that market. Generally speaking, we believe in a continued good development for our insurance segment. And those of you who came to the Capital Market Day heard us talk about Q3, where we introduced Erik Frick, our COO, as well. And I promised you that you would get a chance to meet more from the senior management team, in addition to myself and Peter. Now, I'm sure you enjoy meeting the two of us, but I think it's very important to introduce to you more of my excellent colleagues. And now we have Sebastian. Sebastian Green, our new Chief Information Officer. He started with us in the autumn. He has a very interesting background. And I'm going to hand over to you, Sebastian, to tell us more. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Kenneth, says Sebastian. It's very exciting to be here today. I'm slightly nervous first time around, but I have an even bigger challenge at 7:15. Tomorrow, we're having a cesarean for our second child who's being delivered tomorrow, so perhaps I'm even more nervous about tomorrow. But Kenneth introduced me very briefly. I thought I'd tell you a few more words about myself. My name is Sebastian Green, as you heard. I come most recently from a retail chain in foods, City Gross, in the Swedish market, family-owned company. I've been there for about 10 years now. I worked as a CIO for that company for the past 8 years. I am educated in Lund, computer engineering. I graduated in 1997, and I've worked in retail in one way or another ever since. In shoes, in home electronics, in clothes. I don't think there's any segment where I haven't come across it in some way or another. And I've worked with traditional processes in assortment, pricing, logistics, etc., knowing how all that works. But over the past few years, there's been real emphasis on CRM and e-commerce and all the new technology linked to AI and analysis, needless to say. It's with the greatest of humility that I stand here to you. And when I had talked to Kenneth and decided to go for this assignment, I carried out my diagnosis, my initial diagnosis, as I call it, of the IT situation in the company when I started. And it's important to emphasize that I see that IT combined with the business is an extremely important focus. I spend a lot of time ensuring that the business is running smoothly. So we hope for excellent cooperation there, and we need to make sure that that's where we have innovation created as we move forward. That was a few words about me, briefly. Moving on then to what I've identified so far. At Candace said I started in the autumn. I have about 3 months in the company by now. And let me put it this way. Mainly, I look at this from the perspective of 5 different areas. We have an IT platform today, which is a very good one as I see it. It's satisfactory in many ways, in fact. In addition, we have an excellent in-house team who continuously work with the further development of our platform. We have excellent cooperations with external consultants as well. The infrastructure at the base is up to the task, looking at the platform that this company needs. It's a very good preparatory basis for being able to grow and develop and expanding. In addition, we have an excellent cooperation with a number of different partners that we work with continuously, both in our everyday operations and, of course, with a long-term focus. And what's very important, as I see it, when you consider that we're in consumer loans and payments as a segment, we need to have excellent support, and we need to be very good in our ways of communicating towards consumers so that they feel safe and secure. So all in all, the centralized platform that we have today is robust, it's solid, and there's potential for further growth. IT technology is of a nature where it always needs to be rejuvenated. And what I bring with me into the further processing and value-added process is about further improvements and more focus on consumers, adding the analytical touch a lot more. We're good at it already, but we need to improve even further on that point. And by way of conclusion, I'd like briefly to have a look at some of the projects we're involved in right now. 2018 is to the left on this slide. There are the regulatory projects, PSD2 and GDPR. GDPR, of course, being a project which is continuously going to require work. It's not something that we ever complete fully. And then PSD2 as well, of course. This is going to impact us all the way through 2019, but a lot of it has already been dealt with in 2018. In fact, the credit engine, Kenneth mentioned it briefly, we're working on rolling it out, in particular with emphasizing Denmark, next in line for rollout. And another important jigsaw piece in the puzzle is the platform link to our app, the RB app for consumers. It is a very important platform for us to develop and adapt to the existing requirements. And I have to say that when Kenneth talked about the merchant portal, he was a little bit too humble. I have to say that no matter what you think about this, it's an excellent solution. I come from retail, and I have to say that I've seen a number of different products like this, and I have to say that I'm very proud of this product that we launched in Q2. Now, coming up, we're going to continue to develop our IT platform even further. We're looking at standard products that we can purchase, but we're also looking at the general developments in the market. It's very important that we're keeping up with the technological development that's taking place. We will both look at proprietary systems that we develop with our platform and purchasing solutions. Further development, mainly with the focus on AI, is also important, and linking up with social media a lot more. That's also on our agenda for 2019. Just to mention a couple of examples. There are more, of course, but just to mention two here and now. We also want to create even more value for our partners, our retailers that we work with. We need to package our payment platform a lot better and become even better. Last but not least, we're also looking at a number of analytical tools, and we're making tests, in particular, within the framework of business intelligence and data warehousing. And we link all that to CRM, of course. And finally, to conclude, very important as a focus area is that we want to deliver on our promises always. And the ROI estimates will be delivered upon or even improved upon wherever possible. And that was all I wanted to tell you here and now. Thank you. I'm going to hand the floor over to Peter, of course.
Thank you. Then we're going to continue immediately with the figures, and Kenneth has already shown you this slide, but let's start here again. We deliver a lending, 128 billion, and that's an increase with 16%. What you have to remember is that Q4, we sold our NPL portfolio in Norway, and compared to previous quarters, we had negative currency effects. But if you adjust for those things, we have an underlying growth of around 15%, talking about the lending, and that is about the same rate or even higher compared to what we've seen in previous quarters. We deliver the strongest full-year result ever, and that is in spite of Q4 and the fact that we were burdened by not the least the volatile stock exchange that had an impact on our liquidity portfolio, and we also had the merger of Jar Bank that meant some costs. And I'm going to talk more about this in detail, but Q4 delivered about 9% up compared to Q4 the previous year, so we have a very strong underlying result. Earnings per share, we have up 6%, and the board proposes that we increase dividend with 9%, i.e. 360 for the year, and that is a direct yield of around 6% looking at stock exchange rates today. But we'll talk more about the details later. Let's start now with the lending. We see both in both segments that we have strong growth that goes for all markets as well. Payment solutions is up 12%, excluding currency effects around 10%, and that is the upper span of what we've seen this year. So good, stable growth that we see in all our markets. The growth is mainly thanks to existing partners where we're increasing volumes, but we also have new partners this year, and that growth, however, will take some time before we see it in lending. Consumer loans up 19% in reported currencies, and here we sold the NPL portfolio in Norway. So if we take that and currency effects into consideration, then it's about 18%, so strong growth. And it's also in line with what we've seen in other segments and all quarters this year. And then if we look at our income this quarter, up 9%, full year 11%. And looking at our NBI margin, it's down compared to the previous year. And year to date, we lose around 30 points. But here you have to remember that we have effects on net financial transactions, and that is mainly yield on the liquidity portfolio. And here we had negative effects in Q4 because of the volatility, and that cost us around 20 points compared to the year before. And that taking into consideration, well, margins down somewhat, and that has to do with market product mixes. And we're going to talk more about that when looking at the different segments. But it mainly has to do with consumer loans where we see lower margins. But what we say is the core of our activities, the foundation for everything, that is payment solutions, and there we have stable, somewhat increasing markets. And the margin for the quarter is in line with what we delivered for Q3. And then if we look at expenses, up 14% for this quarter, just under 370 million krona, looking at the full year, 11%. Our CI ratio, which is the important thing here, year to date, we had 40.5%, which is an improvement compared to the year before. And here as well, we have to remember that we do have these effects due to the stock exchange volatility with the lower income, and we also have some 10 million costs in the merger costs for Jar Bank. And if we remove those factors, then we delivered some 39.7%, which is well below the target we had of 40%, which is something very good for underlying activities and something we're very happy with. And this also tells us that we're good at adding volumes to the cost base that we have. And then if we look at credit losses, they're up in absolute figures, and that is due to the lending increasing and also due to the IFRS 9 new rules, which means that the way we account will have higher credit losses. But if we look at what we have underlying the payment flows, they're just as stable as they've been before. And if we compare compare our credit loss of 2% for Q2 with previous quarters, it's also very stable, around 2%, and year to date, 2.1%, which means that we continue to show, in spite of strong developments, we have stable credit losses, and we have had so for a very long time. That means that the growth we have, it does not mean that we increase risk. This means that the risk-adjusted NBI is down for the quarter and also down compared to previous year. This has to do with the yield and the liquidity portfolio and the new rules we have in IFRS 9. Everything else alike, we're within the span that we have decided upon. If we continue with the three segments and we look at them more in detail, we have Payment Solutions, strong growth with 12%. Here we see that the NBI margin for the quarter is at the same level as previous year, and that was a strong quarter. Year to date for the full year, we're up 40 points compared to 2017. Our credit losses are up somewhat compared to the previous year, and that is driven by IFRS 9. That is new. That means, talking about this segment, that we have a stronger risk-adjusted NBI margin. Here, I would like to stress something. This 1.9, it's higher than Q3, and that is driven by the volatility that we see within IFRS 9. The next segment, there you'll see that Q3 we had high credit losses, and they're down in Q4, and that is because of the accounting standard that we're now using. If we look at consumer loans, reported lending, 19%, here we see that our NBI margin is down, and it's impacted by the liquidity portfolio and that yield, and also the underlying product mix that we have, market product mix, that is negative. If you remember Q3, you remember that in Sweden we saw lower NBI margins. That was due to the credit engine and lower prices with the engine, and we said that we were going to adjust that to get margins up in Q4. We have done so. If we look at new lending, we also have higher prices and higher margins. However, what counteracts that increase for the quarter is that if we look at the loans with a higher margin, there we have lower volumes. We're taking more volume at somewhat lower margins, and we're losing some volume where we have the high margins. The price increase that we carried out, that is counter-impacted by these other factors. Credit loss up compared to previous year, but as we said in Q3, they will be down in this quarter compared to Q3, which means that we have a volatility in IFRS 9. However, over time, this is stable. That means that net for the quarter, we have an NBI margin of just below 9%, which is somewhat higher compared to Q3, but lower compared to the same quarter previous year. If we look at the last segment, insurance, and Kenneth has already mentioned this, that we have a growth in premium earned of around 4%. Here we see that we increased the result with 20%, and that is because we have improved the combined ratio with 1.6% compared to 2017. Growth, yes, but what is more important is that we have growth that improves the result from that segment. If we then leave those figures and we look at the balance sheet and the capital structure instead, it's strong. We have 14.7, and we have CET1 of 13.4, and that is a margin above what we have in regulatory rules and also what we have as our internal targets. We have said that we are to be above 11.5 in CET1 and above 14 in total capital. And here I have to say that these figures are somewhat lower compared to Q3, and that is driven mainly by two things. One is that when we carried out the merger of Jaa Bank in Q4, we had to pay back a loan of around 40 million krona that we had, and that costs us about 20 points looking at the capital situation. And secondly, if we look at the operational risk and how that's calculated, when you do that, you look at an average for the last 3 years, and then if you add 2018, you have to take into consideration that we have grown a lot, and that has an impact on capital. And these components are in their nature permanent. However, we are not concerned at all. We are going to look at the capital structure over this spring, and we're going to look at the components we have in supplementary capital, and most likely we are going to also supplement looking at the subordinated loans that will happen this spring, most likely. And here we're also taking into consideration the proposed dividend of 3.60 that has been proposed by the Board of Directors. And then if we look at our funding, it's very much the same as previous years, around 70% deposits, and then we have ABS and MTN financing in addition to that. What we can add, which is somewhat different compared to before, looking at Q4, is that for deposits, we have had Sweden and Norway, and now this fall, we also started with deposits in Germany to get euros into the company, and that share is now increasing, so we have a higher proportion of euros in deposits, which we think is very positive. And then finally, if we look at where we're at compared to the financial targets that we have said that we're to deliver on, we have said that we want growth above 10%, we're at 16%. And if we take currencies, etc., into consideration, around 15%, which is pretty much the same rate as for the entire year. And margins within the span, and credit losses, 40.5%, that has been reported. But here we have to remember that we have these two factors in Q4 with lower yield on the liquidity portfolio and the merger of Jaa Bank. And taking that into consideration, we're below 40%, which is also our target, however, earlier than what we've talked about before. And then return on equity, we have said that we want to be around 30. We report 34% and payout ratio above 50%, and we have a proposal that is just over 60%. And then our capital situation, well, we have a good margin where we're above our regulatory targets and also our own targets for where we want to be. And that means that we end the year with a very strong position. Thank you.
Now, thank you, says the moderator. Thank you. Before we open up for questions from the participants, perhaps we can talk about the liquidity portfolio first. You've had a great deal over, you've emphasized it to some extent this morning. What can you do, I wonder? What do you intend to do? Is this something you're going to have to just live with and accept? Peter, well, as the structure stands right now, we're just going to have to go with it. We need to use the liquidity in other banks, in bonds or shares to some extent. But this is, of course, the first quarter where we've seen such major movements. If we go back and look at our entire period as a listed company, we haven't seen anything like this before. So we'll just have to look into whether we need to make changes as we move forward. We haven't made any decisions as of yet. Okay. And just from a business perspective, is this a line or approach that you are looking at generally, or do you just have to accept that it's out of your hands? Or no, of course we try to reduce it. We are trying to improve the numbers wherever possible, so we do work actively with this.
But it's hard to counterbalance when you see such major movements in the stock exchange, not least at the very end of 2018. Peter, you had a few more questions on that topic in the audience. But can we just briefly broach the end of Q3? You talked about the credit engine a great deal. It appears that it's sort of gone made further in depth in Q4. But the low margins, you talked about the low margins in Q3. Well, how much of that is still here in Q4? And what does it look like moving into 2019? What's happened? What is happening? Peter, well, we've managed in Q4 to raise the margin on new lending. But as I mentioned before, we've lost volumes in some of the high margin loans. So that's counteracting the development. So we'll have to work on that. We're going to now focus on looking at what we can do to mitigate the negative shift in the product mix. But we have to also be aware of the fact that over time, when it comes to consumer loan, there's a general pressure on the margins. There are so many active competitors in this market segment. So over time, and we've said this before, there will be some sort of pressure on the margins for consumer loans. We know that. But right now, we're raising prices. We've done that, and now we're going to focus on the mix. I'm sure we'll have reason to get back to the margins and break down the 50 points. But here's a question from Peter in the audience. Thank you. Peter Gassov from SEB. I have a question for Sebastian Grien. Kenneth, very nice that you include more people from the senior management team. You talked about business analytics and the importance for customers to have analytical tools, be able to analyze their business flows and customers. Where do you stand compared to competitors on that point in your assessment? I'd like to believe that some competitors already have tools like that they're supplying to their customers. I would say that this question has two parts. On the one hand, we have the intelligent tools, and there we have potential. We have some already, and we're good at it, but we need to improve further. The other part is, now I don't know what the competitors have today, of course, but we go quite far back in time as a bank, and so in this segment, and it means that we have a great deal of data. So I have to say that without knowing everything about our competitors in the segment, we really have some we're a few steps ahead of them on that point. And if you were to venture guess on when you'd be up and running on that type of offering, what would you say in terms of the timeline? Oh, that's very difficult. I'm not going to be able to give you a date off the top of my head. This is work that's going to be ongoing throughout this year, this current year, and it's about making small deliveries on a continuous basis. So there will be deliveries throughout the year. I can't give you exact details of any major scale. Thank you. And just briefly, a question about costs and expenses. The development is a lot better than we had expected, and you're counterbalancing the marginal pressure, for example, that you've seen in consumer loans. And if you look at this, I think a number of employees, I think you're up by two or so year on year. The CI2 ratio is also relevant here. You've achieved what you wanted to, what you set out to achieve. What's your next step? Is this a non-recurring effect that means that you saw such excellent development on expenses during the quarter? What can we expect? No, it's not a once-off. We're working on this continuously. We've said it and before, and we'll continue to work to improve our CI ratio. It's not a non-recurring effect, a once-off. We're going to keep working on this continuously. And it's way too early now to talk about the way we achieve our financial targets, but we'll continue to work to improve in every way. But part of what Sebastian talked about, we've mentioned this before, has to do with the further investments we intend to do in IT and in marketing. And part of the efficiency improvements that we've seen in AI, for example, or robotics or what have you, so far we're choosing to invest those savings in areas that will grow our activities. So two parts, really. One is to continue to improve further in cost control, and the second is investing part of the efficiency improvement gains in further development. But it's reasonable to expect that we will continue to improve. And just a follow-up to that, then. The Q2 costs went up, one step up, and then have remained stable throughout the year. Is that where we can expect the cost development in the future? You talk about investments in marketing and IT, that you take one step further up, and then you stay at a stable leveling up phase at the new level.
Well, in Q2, we made an intentional step to invest more in marketing, etc. But then if you look forward into the future, we'll probably see that everything else equal, we'll probably see an increase in costs and expenses, but it's going to be at a slower pace than the growth in volume.
Okay, says the moderator. And if you look at the pace of increase, the pace that we've seen over the past few quarters, is that one that you could envisage would continue?
I think we'll have to get back to you on that one later on.
Just a comment from Kenneth. We don't have to just look at IT and marketing investment as an isolated cost. We also see an impact of those actions. And we see that when we measure our brand, we see an impact of the marketing work so far. And to enhance costs in marketing, we need to see that there's a payoff, of course. We can't just turn the tap, add more money unless we get results at the end. So hopefully, we will also see more revenue.
And on that point, you know, we talked about this in Q3 with more marketing. You're visible in TV ads, for example. I don't know if it's too early already at this stage to see an impact here and now, but what's your feeling?
Well, it's too soon to see the effect, but we have a good feeling, and we do see that a change is happening. It's not something that's big already, but we do see changes, and it's a good feeling. And perhaps we'll see the CMO here another time. But let's now look at some of these figures in more detail. And I'm thinking specifically about consumer loans, where you have NBI margin down with 50 points. But you talked about this, that you have different components here, mix, liquidity portfolio, etc. But could we talk about this? What is driving what? Because that will have an impact looking at the future.
Yes, of course. And if we look at this and compare to previous figures, it's about 50%, 50 points down and about 20 points. That's the liquidity portfolio. And the rest is a combination of a couple of things. One is that we are doing something that we're fully aware of, and that is that we're stepping up in ticket size and the average loans that will help drive lending. And however, they come with a lower NBI margin, but over time, they will also show lower credit losses. However, we do not see that impact yet. It will take a year and a half, maybe two, before we will notice this at the credit loss level. And that is one driver. So we have the mix, and then we have the fact that we are stepping up in ticket size, and that is a choice we have made. But then we also see a general pressure within consumer loans, and that is difficult to say how much is competition, because we know that part of this negative product mix that we have, well, most likely that is because we have competitors that are consolidating loans. So some of those who had loans with us, they move over to competitors, and we do the same thing. And it's difficult to say exactly what the driver is, but we see a certain pressure downwards.
Okay, thank you. I'm back from SEB, and I have a question about payment solutions. You have a very stable margin. And Q4, typically speaking, well, you have Christmas, and you're not making all that much money usually because the invoices are paid in January or February. And Black Friday, of course, has had an impact. And will that change the dynamics within Q4 that you're being paid sooner, for example?
Well, it's possible. And we see this quarter that we have a stable and even an increasing margin. And if we compare to the previous Q4, well, those margins were strong as well. But in 2016, the margins weren't that good. And it's difficult today to say what the trend is. And it will take longer. We need to get into Q1 to see
possible movement, but it looks like we have lending and revenue this year in Q4. If it has to do with Black Friday, that it is a new purchasing financing pattern, meaning that it ends up in the fourth quarter, it's too soon to say. And then a question. There is talk about interest rate increases, and action was taken by the Bank of Sweden, the Riksbank, in December, but you haven't increased rates, right, towards your customers. So what is your evaluation? Well, what the Riksbank did, that will hardly be noticeable, if at all. And our deposit rates, talking about interest rate increases like this, it's more important what competitors do, not what the central bank in Sweden is doing. And if we look at Q4, we actually decreased rates, and we do have the financing that we need anyway. Could we then also look at volumes? And perhaps let's start with Norway and Denmark. Norway has been up and down, and Denmark has been somewhat of a growth engine. But let's start with Norway. Well, Norway throughout the year was pretty stable at lower levels than 2017, and we see nothing that would change that picture for the future. But looking at Q4 17 and also 2018, the new rules in Norway had an impact on volumes for us and our competitors. And now we see that we and, well, basically all competitors have adjusted to the new rules. We did that already in 2017. But we now have a more stable market and more of a level playing field. So we feel that Norway will continue to grow with lower volumes as before, but in a more stable manner. So we are positive when it comes to Norway. And the growth rates that we have seen, let's say, the last two quarters, and you feel that this is more typical for what we'll see also in 2019. Yes. And then Denmark.
We did mention Denmark from the perspective of risk and potential growth as well, of course. Is the situation still looking strong? Yes. And similarly to Norway, in fact, the movements and the development we've seen over the first three quarters, something that is continuing into Q4, with a continued positive outlook, growing Denmark in terms of a percentage more than the other markets. Okay, thank you. When it comes to credit losses, it's always difficult for the people who are sitting on the outside to know what is related to IFRS 9 or what's underlying quality. Because if we go back a year or so, we've seen an improved output generally. What does that look like for you? We have a 20-point difference after all. Have you calibrated your systems, in your opinion, that you're at a level that you could keep in during 2019? Yes, I would say that that is the case, that we can stay on a similar level. But let me also say that we will continue to see movements between quarters and likely between segments as well, because the volatility is sort of built into the IFRS 9 as such, but over time, more stable credit loss levels. I think we have a question over there. Patrik Brattelius from ABG. On credit losses, since we're talking about them, could you tell us a little bit about the differences between countries in terms of credit losses? Yes, I'd be happy to. We're not going to give you the immediate exact detail because we don't report on that. But if we look at the four countries, Sweden, Norway have the lowest credit loss levels, Denmark and, well, Finland and Denmark have the highest ones. And that's not a change. That is a situation that has been stable over a long period of time. But you need to also bear in mind that if we look at the margins that we get for our loans, they're also higher, both in Denmark and Finland, than what we see in Sweden and in Norway. So there are differences between the four countries, but the credit loss levels are higher, in particular in Denmark.
But in the underlying, you don't see any change?
No, however, we don't see any change compared to the previous situation.
Getting back to the liquidity portfolio then, could you tell us a little bit about what the actual exposures you have that impacted these losses? And what about Q1 so far?
We don't go into Q1 yet. It's a little bit too soon for that, but we don't have a change in our investment.
We have the same structure as we have had for a long period of time, but I can't go into exactly what movements we've seen in which bonds. But it's both bonds and shares, in fact, impacted.
And what does the split look like? How much shares, how much bonds?
Well, I can't tell you off the top of my head, but mainly bonds in this component. Shares, a smaller part, mainly in insurance activities.
Okay. If we then go to, well, you're quite far above your Common Equity Tier 1 objective. Could you tell us a little bit about how you look at that in relation to the buyback mandate for repurchasing? Could you tell us anything about that a bit more?
Well, as we mentioned, our primary tool to get capital to the shareholders is by using dividends. So that's what we do. Then we will see some share buybacks as an additional tool. The authorization was granted by the AGM to the board to proceed with such buybacks. You need to apply and get a license from the supervisory financial SFSA. It needs to be renewed. It's pending right now, but we will get it, and I expect them to use it.
When do you expect to get that approval then for a renewal?
Well, soon.
However,
before the end of Q1?
Yes.
Okay, that's all for me. Thank you. I think Peter from SEB had another question.
Yes, a final question, a follow-up talking capital. 190 points above your capital target. And you have a target which is described as that you are to be above 11.5. And how far above is a reasonable level? Well, that will vary over time, depends on developments in the activities and what opportunities we see to use capital, maybe for an acquisition. But let's take a step back. We will most likely try to be somewhat above that target. And this is where we have the buyback, among other things, to see if we can slowly move down towards the target, looking at CET1 to be just above the target. But we will do this step by step. We do not want to end up in a situation where we distributed too much money one year and then, buy back too much, and then that will get us in trouble. We do not want to see that situation. SEB, then about margins. You've talked about Denmark, where you also have a higher income on margins. And is it true that the last year Denmark has grown faster than the average? And you see margin pressure in consumer loans. And is that somewhat hidden by the fact that you have the growth in Denmark? If we were to look at Sweden or Norway, so that it would be higher, excluding Denmark? Well, to some extent, but you have to remember that Denmark, compared to Norway and Sweden, is very small, talking consumer loans. So if in percentages the increase is bigger, then most of what we have is in Norway and Sweden, so it doesn't have that much of an impact. I believe that we have a question over the telephone. Well, it doesn't seem that we have a question, but if you do want to ask a question, press 01.
By way of conclusions, as the moderator, if there are no other questions, there is another question over there. Go ahead. Yes, I had a concluding question from ABG. The portfolio you divested in Norway, what was your profit? Was there a profit on the sale? And perhaps you could tell us who you sold it to. Do you provide that information? I'm certainly not sure whether I can give you information of who we sold it to, but it's a couple of the big Nordic players. I think I can say that much. The profit is virtually zero. And if we go back to why we are selectively selling portfolios, we've talked about this before. There are two drivers. One is if we sell off smaller portfolios that require too much administration from us. That's not the case here in the Norwegian sales. The other is if we have portfolios that are showing below average returns, and that's the category where we find it, the Norwegian portfolio, consumer loans for Norway that we sold. Thank you. And one final question from the moderator, an open question for Kenneth. Looking at your targets, your financial targets, and you're on top of all of them, what do you want to see in 2019? I assume you're not going to start playing more golf in Helsingborg. No, I dropped out of golf completely 7 or 8 years ago. It takes too long and too much time. But I really enjoy the growth. I keep working to make sure that we're successful in our different segments. I've already told you that we want to expand on our factoring activities. We see a great deal of potential there. And it's satisfactory, I have to say, to see that we've been able to reduce costs the way we have, in spite of the fact that we've invested both in marketing and IT. So Peter touched upon this, of course, the amount of staff. We have shown that we're a scalable organization, and I'm very glad to see this development. Sebastian, one of the first things he told me when he came in to talk to me is, we've a lovely group of people in IT. You ask them for something, they roll up their sleeves, they put in the extra effort. So it's the corporate atmosphere. We're there for each other. And that's what's behind these results. And then, of course, the board and Peter are paying out all the money, so I can't grow endlessly. But jokes aside, we have a good balance, and we do see that we have good opportunities for further growth. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Sophie? Thank you. Thank you, Jens, and thank you to all our speakers and all the participants here and everywhere. We release on the 19th of March our annual report and sustainability report, and the Q1 report will be released, and we talk about it on the 24th of April at the conference then. Thank you very much to all.